Support for this program comes from Bloomsterhouse, filled with plants and herb starts for the spring. Open 10 to 5, Monday through Saturday. Bloomsterhouse on Main Street, Facebook, and at 907-772-2566.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you a ripe one, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a big homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes.
Hello, and welcome back to In the Garden. I'm your host, Daniel Rowan Tucker. Thanks for joining me this afternoon. Well, I hope you spent some more time in a garden this week. We had some really gorgeous blue sky weather for a little bit there. I stopped by the Bloomsterhouse the other day and had a great time picking out some plants from their end-of-season sale, 25% off everything outside, plants and soil. There were rhododendrons, a couple different varieties, great standby plant for Mitkoff Island. Everybody's garden oftentimes needs a little more kind of foundational structure, a little more year-round interest. Rhododendrons are really awesome for that with their evergreen foliage. Climbing hydrangeas, that's a really great plant for here. There's a couple of them around town doing really well. As you're driving out the highway, a little bit before you get to Rockies Marine on the water side, opposite from the entrance to Odin Lane, there's a really beautiful house with a kind of herringbone wood siding and gorgeous, gorgeous garden out front. And they've got a beautiful specimen of climbing hydrangea growing all over their shed there right by the driveway. It's got beautiful peeling bark and yellow color in the fall, white flowers in the spring. A really underutilized plant for around here, and they've got several of them down at the Bloomsterhouse. Oregon grape, there's a couple of those around town. It needs really good drainage and full sun here, but they can do quite well in the right spot. There's a really nice big one on the south-facing wall of the federal building where they're currently doing a bunch of renovations, and I've been watching it and just praying that this beautiful Oregon grape plant doesn't get destroyed in the renovations. But so far, it's just outside of the construction zone, right behind the totem poles there on the corner of Haugen and Nordic Drive. So take a look. Oregon grape's one of my favorites. And the fruit's edible, very sour, but super flavorful. I like nibbling on them. And the plant has all kinds of medicinal uses, plus beautiful, bright, bright yellow flowers in the spring. They've got a bunch of hops plants. That's an easy one to grow. If you've ever been out to the flower farm, you've probably seen the massive hops vine growing over the archway, over the entrance there. Another one with edible, herbal, medicinal uses. Herbaceous, dies back in the winter, but grows like crazy in the summer. Check out what they've got at the Bloomsterhouse. There's a lot of good plants still down there. Today, I want to explore raspberries and all their brambly kin. The raspberry season is upon us at last, along with their cousins, the tangy thimbleberries. Today we're going to dive into the whole wonderfully fruitful clan of cane-growing berry bushes found in the genus Rubus. Our familiar domestic raspberry is partly descended from the wild Rubus ideus, with a scientific name derived from the fact that ancient Greeks found it growing on the upper slopes of Mount Ida, a mountain near the fabled city of Troy in what is now western Turkey. Rubus ideus grows wild across much of northern Eurasia, often found in and around forested areas. Modern fruiting varieties of red raspberry are mostly hybrids, and they also carry genes from the closely related American red raspberry, Rubus strigosus. The genus Rubus is incredibly diverse, with anywhere from 250 to 1,000 species, depending on which botanist you talk to, and countless hybrids in between species. These brambles grow on every continent except Antarctica. Fossil evidence suggests that they originated in North America during the Eocene period, some 40 million years ago, and then migrated to other continents during the later Miocene period. Some of the hybrid Rubus have been developed in recent times for commercial fruit production, including loganberries, boysenberries, tayberries, marionberries, tummelberries, nectarberries, and youngberries, to name just a few. Adding to the genetic jigsaw puzzle is the fact that Apomyxis is quite common among the Rubus clan. Wait, what is Apomyxis? Apomyxis is the ability of some plants to produce viable seed without being fertilized by another genetically distinct plant. So they essentially clone themselves by seed, and thus they can end up producing whole populations of identical plants that sometimes get classified as their own subspecies. Long story short, the tangled thicket that is Rubus genetics will keep botanists busy for a long time. Here in southeast Alaska, many species of Rubus are right at home. We have the ubiquitous native salmonberry, Rubus spectabilis, forming dense thickets all over Petersburg and providing a bountiful crop even in years like this with the unrelenting rain we had throughout the flowering period. Thimbleberries, Rubus parviflorus, are another widespread native bramble, preferring more sandy, well-drained soil than their moisture-loving cousin, the salmonberry. Thimbleberries taste more like a raspberry, packed with zingy flavor that, in my opinion, more than makes up for their delicate consistency. When fully ripe, they tend to turn to jam on your fingertips as you pick them. So keep an eye out for thimbleberries. There's also the elusive nagoonberry, found in kind of marshy meadow beach habitats like Point Agassiz sometimes. Somewhat elusive, very low growing, close to the ground, has bright pink flowers and sort of reddish-orange fruits with a wonderful, intense, candy-like flavor. Really, really good, if you can find them. Cloudberries, which grow in the muskegs, I believe, and also in other places, kind of like a nagoonberry, but maybe a little more sour, not quite that intense berry candy flavor. And the five-leafed bramble, Rubus pedatus, which is sort of a shade-loving forest dweller, not really known for its fruit, which are teeny tiny, but it is quite common in some of our old-growth forests and forest edge habitats here. Domestic raspberries seem to really thrive here, and they're commonly found popping up along ditches and fence lines. They've even been known to sprout up in the muskeg when they're spreading from a nearby garden bed. They're easily propagated by division of the roots, a healthy section of root being capable of growing a whole new plant, also known as a crown. Raspberries, blackberries, and their kin are mostly cane-growing plants. That is to say, they send up long arching shoots from the ground that produce only leaves and vegetative growth in their first year, and these are called primocanes, and then flowers and fruit from that cane in the following year when it becomes a floricane. Some raspberry varieties are fall-bearing, so their primocanes turn to floricanes at the end of a single growing season, and those plants can be mowed to the ground every winter without affecting the fruit crop. And I don't know if the raspberries that folks are growing around Petersburg are mostly fall-bearing or summer-bearing. I'd like to find out more about that. You're welcome to call in 907-772-3808 if you want to share details about your raspberry experiences here in Petersburg. There's different management approaches depending on the different varieties when it comes to things like pruning. Growing raspberries with a T-shaped trellis to support the canes is a pretty common practice. This helps to maximize garden space by keeping them from sprawling out in every direction. So you can train the canes between two wires, oftentimes like a T shape about 4 or 5 feet high with like a second little T underneath it, slightly narrower. And you can use old trolling wire or something strung between the two end posts. And then the canes growing up in between that, you kind of keep them within the wires, and you can bend over the canes and tie them to the wires as needed to keep them from flopping around too much. And helps to have that support and kind of, yeah, creates more space in your garden. It's good to thin out the old spent canes that have already borne their fruit. After the second year, they're generally just going to die and be a dead stick in the garden. It won't bear any more fruit after that. So thinning those out brings in more light and air circulation for everything else. Also, keeping the canes that are growing, the current crop of canes growing in the bed, thin to about 2 or 3 per square foot is a recommendation that I've come across from Michael Phillips in the Holistic Orchard, a really savvy grower from New Hampshire. So keeping the canes somewhat thinned, you know, just helps everything have more air and light and keeps them from getting too crowded. A big one around here that a lot of raspberry growers here talk about is the importance of having some kind of covering over them, even if it's just temporary. Not only during the fruiting period when the fruit is ripe, because that helps prevent mold when the fruits are developing, if it happens to be really rainy, which it sometimes is around here, but also during the flowering period earlier in the season to help with pollination. And I think we really saw that this spring with how much it rained. And I've been noticing on the wild raspberry or the kind of feral raspberries that I'm finding around town coming up along ditches and fence rows, there's not too much of a fruit crop this year. And I kind of wonder if, you know, all the rain we had in the spring, May, June, put a real damper on pollinators getting to those raspberry flowers. And so folks say if you've got some kind of shelter from the rain when they're flowering as well, even if it's raining everywhere else, that can really help the bees get to those flowers and get good pollination. And so some people do the temporary, you know, like they have a raised bed with sort of a framework over it, maybe incorporating the trellis as well. And then you can temporarily throw a sheet of polycarbonate, clear polycarbonate, or even just stretch some clear greenhouse plastic over the top of that to protect the flowers and the fruits when you want to. A lot of folks also, if they have the space, the time, and the resources to put into it, have their raspberries in basically an open-sided greenhouse, where it's just like a greenhouse structure with the roof but not the walls in place, because the raspberries don't need the extra heat around here. They're pretty happy in the climate. It's just that the depending on the amount of rainfall we get can really affect the flowers and the fruit. So having them in that kind of open-sided greenhouse can really help for getting consistent big crops of raspberries. Ed Bujarski up in Juneau has told me that certain varieties of thornless blackberry have done really well for him, growing vigorously, producing good fruit. Kind of similar game to the raspberries with protecting the fruit from the rain. But in general, I would be curious to see more trials of some of the many hybrid berries here in the Petersburg area. There's so many different varieties out there. A number of them, like the Tayberry, developed in Scotland, which is a similar cold, wet, northerly climate, same latitude as here. So I think there could be potential to try out some other different berry varieties, and broaden our palate, so to speak, I've heard of one called the Japanese wineberry, Rubus phoenicolasus. People growing that in the UK say it's super tasty. Anyways, huge diversity of Rubus out there. A lot of potential to experiment and try some different things. Down in Washington, where I used to live, there's a really delicious wild black raspberry, Rubus leucodermis. And I think it's quite ornamental, too. It has these very pale white canes, but it happens to be super spiny. The little thorns on those canes are just sharp as needles, but maybe a good choice for what they call a barrier planting when you want to keep someone or something out. I would be curious to see how that grows here, if it would do well. There's quite a few other black raspberry varieties out there. Would be interesting to see how those do. Nurseries like Rain Tree Nursery and Burnt Ridge down in Washington carry a pretty good selection of raspberry and blackberry and other hybrid berry varieties. Or just ask around your neighborhood for someone who'll let you dig up a few runners. Again, super easy to propagate. Fun to grow. You know, they need full sun and decent drainage, but otherwise pretty easy plants to get started. So, yeah, highly recommended for the home garden. Keep your eyes peeled for berries out there. 'Tis the season, and they won't last forever. That's all for now, folks. Thanks for listening.
Support for this program comes from Bloomsterhouse, filled with plants and herb starts for the spring. Open 10 to 5, Monday through Saturday. Bloomsterhouse on Main Street, Facebook, and at 907-772-2566.
There ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you a ripe one, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a pick. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Out to eat, and that's for sure, but it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy, eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle, put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. If I was to change this life I lead, well, I'd be Johnny Tomato Seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden be much better, and I could be pushing up homegrown tomatoes. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.